Welcome back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM, and my guest is Robert David Steele. We're talking about open sourcing everything, and ultimately, this just turns a lot of conversations on their heads, because if you look at bringing the power back into the hands of the people and people really starting to realize us, how much power we really have. When we look at something like the internet, we take that as face value, as this is the end all be all the information we need to see is here. Well, what if we change the way that we index things? What if we, small groups of us, know these types of things? And for example, my guest does, how to find activists' websites, how to find things that are buried in the deep web. Well, they're not findable by search engines, my guest says, because they're not translatable. We're going to ask that question when we come back, and your questions as well when we come back. So stick with us. We'll be back with my guest in just a few minutes. Welcome back. This is Lisa Gar. My guest is Robert David Steele. He's a former CIA officer, and actually I haven't even asked you about that. You said former CIA, and now you said that you've got your clearance back again. So if you have your clearance back, how is it that you're able to talk about all of these things on the air?
Well, first off, I have a secrecy oath, which I've always honored. I'm a reformer. I'm not a whistleblower. And I have never violated that oath. And frankly, I've forgotten most of the secrets I once knew. But Alvin Toffler wrote a chapter about me called The Future of the Spy, which is easily found online. And after he did that, the CIA agreed that I could come out from undercover. And so I was given official permission to speak about being a former spy. And I also, my resumes are approved by CIA's Publications Review Board, which I've always found to be very professional. But it also means there's a lot of stuff that's not in my resume, particularly technical stuff. So let me tell you, the number one skill in spying outside of listening is typing. It's a bureaucracy.
It's a desk job.
Well, it is. I mean, for every hour of agent meeting with someone who's agreed to betray their country or their organization, for every hour of agent meeting, you've got roughly 4 hours of typing. You've got your expense report, your security report, you've got your TDFIRs, which are the foreign intelligence reports. What have you learned? And you've got to put all that in there. So it really is very, very bureaucratic.
Where did you spend most of your time? What country?
It's now known that I was in El Salvador, Venezuela, and Panama, with side trips into Central America. I was one of the first officers assigned terrorism as a full-time target in the 1980s. And I have to tell you, people ask me, do you recommend working for CIA? I absolutely do. It is a lifetime opportunity. If you can get in there, do it, because then when you come out, I mean, one of the cool things about what I do is I'm not a librarian saying use open source. I'm a spy saying spying doesn't work. Use open source.
And now, why doesn't spying work?
Well, part of the problem is that the CIA approach to spying is very, very bureaucratic. It relies on official cover facilities, which are very, very easy to monitor. So I will tell you, my personal judgment is that 95% of CIA clandestine case officers are known to local liaison within 2 weeks of their being in country. So CIA is not really secret. In fact, the primary use of secrecy at CIA is to lie to Congress, and to deceive the American people.
Now, who funds the CIA?
Well, the U.S. public funds the CIA, although there are certainly stories about Saudi Arabia providing vast amounts of money to CIA through other means. Things of mutual interest. But I really want to stress, CIA is good people trapped in a bad system. I certainly am strongly opposed to CIA's drone program, which has a 98% collateral damage ratio. Only 2% of the people killed by drones are actually legitimate targets.
Oh, wow.
Strongly opposed to their rendition and torture program. Frankly, I'm strongly opposed to the fact that they don't know much. They have children. Who are hired because they're cheap And the assumption is that if they're Fed secrets, they'll be expert. The Dutch are still laughing over the Queen of Sheba who rolled in from CIA. She was a young analyst. And within 5 minutes, the Dutch understood that she didn't speak Dutch. She had no understanding of Dutch history. She was completely unfamiliar with Dutch nuances and issues. And then thought that because she was from the CIA, she was somehow somebody special. We don't actually have an experienced intelligence cadre anymore. We don't actually have the ability to advise the president. And when we do, for example, on Iraq, my colleagues knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They knew this for an absolute fact based on both the defection of Saddam Hussein's son-in-law and Charlie Allen, who was then the DCI for collection. He had sent in 20 line crossers who went and talked to their families who were in the program. And it was very clear that Iraq had kept the cookbooks, destroyed the stocks, and was bluffing for regional sake. But George Tenet prostituted himself as the director of Central Intelligence and gave the president and the vice president what they wanted, which was a false slam dunk. Yes, there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The DCI had no basis for saying that. He was not telling the truth.
Now, wouldn't most of your colleagues, the CIA colleagues, be upset with you saying these things right now?
Actually, what my colleagues tell me is that they appreciate the fact that I am telling people that they actually knew what they were doing on Iraq, and it was the DCI that betrayed the CIA.
I see. So you're saying basically your version of the truth and what you saw, and you're saying that most people would agree with you in that particular situation as well at that time.
Jim Bamford has written an excellent book called Pretext for War. And in fact, I'll just mention to your listeners, since I know you don't have that much time to talk about intelligence or these other subjects, I've reviewed over 300 books on intelligence. And that includes, I think, 9 books and DVDs on the JFK assassination, in which CIA was heavily involved at some levels. So I've got a long list of books that I've reviewed on intelligence that people can go to read. And these are summary books. So they're a form of spy story, if you will, a Cliff's Notes for smart people who are interested in spying and the craft of intelligence.
Such a fascinating topic. Okay, I'm going to go to the phones here. I've got our wild card line. I've got Mike from Connecticut. Hi, Mike, do you have a question for Robert David Steele? Mike just went away. Okay, that's fine. We'll go to Fred on Wildcard Line 2. Fred from Michigan. Hi, do you have a question for Robert David Steele?
Yes, I do. Robert, I've read a book, The Synagogue of Satan by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. And in there, he cites rather alarming data, such as regarding 9/11, that there was a coordination scheme between the Pentagon's Office of Special Plans and its counterpart in Israel. And the security companies at the airports involved on 9/11 were also commandeered by security Israeli intelligence agencies. And additionally, when close to 200 to 300 Israeli Mossad operatives had been arrested and interrogated by FBI and other police, Olmert called Giuliani, Chertoff, and the FBI director, whom I think was Ashcroft, and he demanded their release. So they were deported back to Israel on visa violations, they said, despite the fact they had been arrested with moving vans that had bomb-making material and large stashes of cash and multiple passports.
Are you asking if all of this is true, if this is unknown or true?
Well, he certainly asked enough for me to give an answer. May I? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, I will tell you first off that I have enormous regard for the families of 9/11, who were the very first people to essentially say that the government was lying about 9/11. And I have enormous regard for Richard Gage and the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. I'm a member of the intelligence officers for 9/11 Truth. And I will say categorically that 9/11 has not been properly investigated and that I do believe that Dick Cheney made 9/11 possible. We were warned by 13 different countries that 9/11 was going to happen. And if you look up at Phi Beta Iota Mini-Me Convergence 9/11, you'll get right to it. And in fact, 9/11 has been trending recently. From where I sit, the Zionist government of Israel and the Mossad was fully aware that 9/11 was going to happen. I certainly will not say and cannot say that they were a part of it. I am pretty sure that explosives were put into the AIG floor. I'm pretty sure that airplanes did not actually hit 9/11, and I'm pretty sure that a missile hit the Pentagon that was fired by us. And when you talk about the Zionists being arrested, I think it was closer to 20 in number rather than 200. And I believe that most of them were sent here to film and to observe rather than to actually participate. I do believe that an independent investigation is absolutely required, not only of 9/11, but also of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Because I think when people understand that John F. Kennedy was assassinated by his own government in complicity with New York Money and Texas Energy and Rabin, who was in Dallas for the event, and J. Edgar Hoover and George Bush Sr., who was in Dallas for the event. All of this stuff will shock the American people into paying attention. So I do not blame the Zionists for 9/11. I do believe that the Zionists took full advantage of it. I do believe that Larry Silverstein was fully briefed by the Mossad, and that's when he undertook the $7 billion insurance program. 9/11 solved an asbestos problem for Larry Silverstein. It also allowed the Goldman Sachs, and basically the reason WTC-7 was destroyed, even though it wasn't hit, and all three buildings were destroyed by controlled demolitions, I'm pretty certain of this.
Really?
I really have to point you to this Mini-Me Convergence 9/11 post, because that pulls out the best from the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. WTC-7's destruction did was it eliminated every single SEC investigation of every single New York bank that was being investigated at the time.
Wow. Were you in the service at that time? Were you in the CIA at that time?
No, I left the CIA in 1988.
Oh, okay. All right. So you weren't there at the time, but you still...
Oh, but that would be irrelevant, because what 9/11 is really about is what everybody knew outside of the intelligence community. And I really want to stress this. 13 countries warned us in advance. And these warnings are all a matter of public record. People underestimate the power of paying attention.
That's a great statement. All right, let's go to our first-time caller, Dennis, in Scottsdale, Arizona. Dennis, you have a question for Robert David Steele.
I have two, one of which is, he aware that there is a bill in Congress to release the 28 pages of the 9/11 report that Bush made secret, which supposedly reveals Saudi Arabia's complicity, control, and all that Obama refuses to make public after saying in a campaign promise that he would make it public.
Let's find out. Are you aware of that, Robert?
Yes, and I absolutely believe that Saudi Arabia had a major role to play in making all of this possible, in funding it.
Okay, and what was your other question, Dennis?
My other question was, I've heard some things about how Prescott Bush and one of the Foster Dulles people allowed some Nazis to go unprosecuted into the Ukraine, and that those Ukrainian Nazis were essentially part of the Svoboda Party in the right sector and used by Obama to get rid of the Ukrainian government that was wanting to go towards Russia versus the European Union. Does he know anything about any of that connection?
Good question.
I would encourage you, the Ukraine is a very, very interesting geopolitical issue. And at Phi Beta Iota, we've published a lot of stuff from Berto Youngman and others. And if you go there and you just look up, you use the search bar for Ukraine, you'll get to a lot of stuff. Number one, The Ukraine has been a covert action that has probably been funded by George Soros and others, as well as the CIA. And unfortunately, what we've done in the Ukraine is we've replaced a corrupt communist government with a corrupt fascist government. The Ukraine is about stopping the emerging relationship between Russia and Europe. It's an attempt, it's a geopolitical attempt to try and threaten Europe with problems by making Russia the bad guy. Now, coming back to fascism and Prescott Bush, I think most Americans would be shocked if they really paid attention and understood just how the New York banking families supported Hitler and enabled Hitler. It was New York money that enabled World War II. Hitler did not have the money to go to war until he was lent that money by New York banks and others. And last but not least, I want to mention there's an excellent book called Gold Warriors, which talks about how we captured a lot of the Japanese gold that was stolen from China and Indonesia and Malaysia. And we used that in a Black Lily Fund to restore fascists to power in Italy, Japan, and Germany. And in fact, CIA and the Catholic Church had a great deal to do with not only importing the Nazi Hydra into the United States of America, where it is still a problem, but we also helped the Nazis exfiltrate many of their important people and a lot of their wealth to Argentina and other places. So there are a lot of really bad things that have been done in our name. And I believe that the Bush family and Obama have a great deal to be held accountable for.
Do you think that we could ever have something that would be the opposite of this? That we could ever clean all of this up?
Yes. I'm so pleased that you asked that, because that's so important. I really want to stress that I'm huge on truth and reconciliation. There is absolutely no good to be had from vindictive justice or...
It could spiral and spiral and spiral, yes.
Absolutely right. I mean, I want forgiveness, and I just want the 1% to get out of the way. And in fact, I'll mention to your listeners that the 1% are breaking ranks. Lady Lynn Rothschild, who is originally from New Jersey, has sponsored a conference on inclusive capitalism. The Mars family goes back to 1947 with their concept of mutuality economics. And there are some black sheep billionaires on the West Coast, as well as in Europe, talking about redemptive capitalism. The 1% has achieved their goal of achieving a 100% corrupt U.S. government. And what they're finding is it's not working.
It's not everything that they planned on it being, yes.
Killing the golden goose. They have killed the blue-collar master class. They have killed the white-collar middle class. Not working. So the 1% is now starting to realize that if they combine giving back 1% to 2% to create the open source everything solutions that we need, and if they get out of the way, we can create infinite wealth for the 99%. In fact, The Guardian has an excellent series on rethinking prosperity. And I am very optimistic. I believe that we, the people, are going to restore our power within the next 5 to 10 years.
Wow, that is optimistic. I wanted to ask you one more thing about the open sourcing. What about privacy? Would open source limit our or expose what we have private in terms of credit?
I really have to stress that privacy is a sacred right. And there's a wonderful woman who's known as Identity Lady. And when we were at Hackers on Planet Earth together, we ended up having lunch. And one of the things she pointed out to me was that I had forgotten in my book and in other writings and public.
Wait, we're going to have to, that's a cliffhanger. We're going to have you cover that after the break. Sorry to interrupt you there, but I'd like to hear about it a little bit more. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Gari, listening to Coast AM. Welcome back. My guest is Robert David Steele, and his book is called Open Source Everything, his latest book anyway. We were just talking about, what about privacy issues? Robert, would all of our if we were to open source everything, what about our private information in terms of our credit card numbers, living wills, different photos and so forth? Would that be open to the internet?
Open source security is encryption that the government cannot crack. So you opt in to sharing information. Everything else remains private.
Got it. Okay.
All right. And so I really, I'm a huge believer in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. I'm a huge believer in quantum encryption and open source encryption by, let me give you an example. NSA got Dell, IBM, HP, Microsoft, Google. It got all of them to compromise their communications and computing capabilities. NSA put backdoors into all of these private sector corporation communications and computing systems and services and products. If you buy something from IBM today, it has an NSA backdoor. Okay? Now, if that were open source code, that would be stopped. But it's because it's proprietary code that is controlled by IBM that is not visible to people that it has been compromised.
Ah, okay. I understand. All right. So that answers that question. We're going to take another quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to go back to callers because there's a bunch of people here that have a lot of questions for you. Lit up the lines with your previous conversation about the Pentagon and about 9/11. So we'll be back to answer your calls in just a minute. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. This is Lisa Garr. My guest is Robert David Steele. We're talking about the truth at any cost lowers all costs, which is what Robert talks about in his open source everything book. Now, we've opened every topic here. We've talked about 9/11. We've talked about open sourcing the internet. We've talked about the CIA. We've talked about pretty much everything. So we're going to the calls here, and just to continue the conversation, I'd love to talk with Eric here on Wildcard Line 2 from Boise, Idaho. Eric, do you have a question for Robert David Steele?
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, that's such an awesome idea. I like that. I mean, it's the people taking control of the currency. But hey, I talked to the screener about one thing, so I have like a two-part question. You made me think of something else.
Okay.
I had an idea a while back about what if the world market tried to devalue the U.S. dollar, and with people like Obama not, you know, losing his power and stuff like that, and the people taking control, if that did happen, what we could do is we could stop all export of food, and we basically use, you know, we kind of go back to, you know, consuming what we produce and valuing our own currency within our own borders. Because if our currency got devalued on the world market, if we believe that as a nation and we go, wait a minute, you know, we're a pretty, you know, powerful technological producing nation, and we have enough resources to value our own currency within our own border.
Mm-hmm.
If our dollar was, like, you know, on the world market devalued, well, we could kind of do like Iceland did, you know, which isn't talked about very much. You know, where Iceland, instead of taking the international
currency, we could basically be self-sustaining, right?
Put its bankers in jail, which is not something Obama's willing to do. In fact, this latest attorney general is the trifecta. It's a woman of color from Hillary's state.
Mm-hmm. And Loretta.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter because she's irrelevant. But first off, let me just say that your idea is a really good one if we had an honest government. But in fact, big agriculture, which is perverting our entire agricultural industry toward corn for cattle and corn syrup and all of this other stuff, they're going to fight that. The only way it will work, and I absolutely agree with you, we need to become self-sufficient. We need to restore jobs. I mean, one of the reasons we're in a mess is because corporations have been allowed to export jobs. Technology has replaced many jobs. For example, you have tomatoes now that are designed to be picked by a machine, which means they've lost their flavor, they've lost a lot of their nutrition. They're kind of machine tomatoes. Now, if our local communities get back to it, the United Nations has just declared that the only form of sustainable agriculture is essentially organic community agriculture. So I'm totally on your wavelength, but it's not going to happen as a nation. It's only going to happen one community at a time.
Now, you mentioned to me something earlier about the true cost economics, Robert. You said that is there a way to know how much water we truly have and how what our resources truly are?
Yes. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm going vegan is because I'm starting to realize that a pound of beef takes 5,000 gallons of water and is generally not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And a pound of tomatoes is 20 gallons of water and is very good for you. So the true cost, we have an example up on our website that took a year to research by Jay-Z Liskowitz. And it's about a T-shirt, a simple cotton T-shirt. It has over 17 gallons of water. It has over 5 grams of fuel. It has produced toxins in various forms that have been identified. It's been made with child labor at 50 cents a day. It has regulatory and tax avoidance issues. So if you had a handheld application that would show you red, yellow, and green dots for any given product and say, hey, in relation to water, fuel, and toxins, this product is not consumer friendly. It's not earth friendly. Then you would have choices. Now, this is information that the producers don't want you to have. We do have some videos like The Secret Life of Beef and things like that. And people are starting to do this. The day that the average consumer understands every single product that Coca-Cola and Nestle and Monsanto are offering up is bad for us, is the day we will change markets overnight. And it's called boycott.
Buy, B-U-Y?
Boycott. In fact, there's a website, www.boycott.com. They've taken the first step, which is to identify corporations that you want to impoverish. That then allows you to identify products made by those corporations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But nobody has taken the step, because it's a huge database challenge, nobody has taken the step of being able to, you want to be able to point your phone at something, scan in the barcode, and see the true cost of that product. For example, smartphones.
That would be great. That would be amazing. Yes.
These people in leukemia wards.
Mm-hmm.
Phones are made with a class A carcinogenic that is legal only in China.
Hmm. If we knew more, and that's basically what we're talking about in terms of what is buried in the deep web. All right, let's go back to the phones here. We've got Jim, east of the Rockies in Kentucky. Jim, do you have a question for Robert David Steele?
Yes, ma'am. Robert, I wanted to ask you, I'm a big believer in what you're saying. I don't know a lot about open source software, and I've been trying to do some research and do some reading and all that. My basic question is, if you have a computer that already has IBM, Microsoft, whatever, if you put the open source in that computer next to that, does that compromise the open source, or is that secure? I want to move to open source. I'm really tired of Microsoft
right.
and all these other.
And there's a Think Penguin company now that's making open source laptops and open source routers. So the hardware is open source. And then you can, of course, get different kinds of open source software. I think the answer to your question is that your open source software is going to be as secure as it can be in it, and there won't be crossover penetration. However, I'm not an expert. I think you're better off having only open source.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, is that open source software and hardware been developed already?
The short answer is yes. There's a wonderful company out there. I think it's thinkpenguin.com. They're creating open source laptops. And the whole idea here is to eventually go all in on open source. So you can't just have open data. For example, if you have open data, then what you're doing is you're basically creating data for the companies with proprietary software to take for free.
Right.
But if you have open data plus open source software plus open hardware, and then you can go a step further and go to an open cloud, open geospatial, open spectrum. There's something called open base transceiver service, which is essentially free cell phone service, free Wi-Fi. When you go all into the opens, you're creating an ecology of open that is affordable for everybody. It makes information sharing possible. It makes community sense making possible. It essentially begins reversing the enclosure of the commons and the corporatization of everything.
It's basically like making a giant worldwide blog.
that's one way of putting it. Yes, although I would have Wikipedias. I mean, I would have Wikipedias. Right. With integrity, I would have databases. If I were president, you wouldn't graduate from school without having done a true cost economic study of one. I would harness the distributed intelligence of the whole nation. What it boils down to is it makes it possible. Today we're stovepiped to death. If you look at Oracle and Microsoft and all these other companies with databases and so forth, they don't talk to each other. Big data is a fraud. Big data myths and big data malpractices are absolutely outrageous. Most big data cannot be transferred over our 10 megabyte lines. If you have a petabyte, a terabyte of data adds up to a petabyte over a year.
Is that what big data is?
Big data is beyond terabytes. And if you wanted to move a petabyte of data from New York City to Washington, D.C., it would take 3 years.
Hmm.
3 years. Okay, so most big data is moved in physical devices, and most processing centers don't have the excess capacity to actually process that big data looking for patterns.
Right, I see.
This I could go on forever.
Wow, this is, yeah, definitely. All right, let's go back to our phone lines here, because that opens up a whole other can of worms. We've got about 7 minutes left here. Let's go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Hi, Blair, how you doing?
Hi, thanks, Lisa. You remind me of Lauren Bacall, the great American actress with that sultry, intelligent voice.
Oh,
keeps me awake at night.
Bless you.
I had the pleasure to meet Valerie Plame, Mr. Steele, and Ambassador Joseph Wilson 6 years ago here in Sedona. Mm-hmm. And they said that the trends that are causing great harm, exactly as you say, to the CIA agency is the politicalization and the outsourcing of intelligence work to the public corporations. And then Ambassador Wilson said democracy depends for its strength on the participation of its citizenry. And I wanted to ask you, the proprietary nature of voting technology currently, how can that help finance better education for our children in our future?
Wait, say that again?
The proprietary nature of the voting technology right now. We're in a situation here where we have private firms, you know, controlling the votes. We spent, what, $4 billion on the last election, and it seems that the money's not going to education for our future, but it's going to more war and, you know, keeping the fracking and the oil going.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I was very impressed by this Bitcoin presentation, because essentially the government is being allowed to print money, and it's being allowed to fund things that are imposing a debt burden on future
mm-hmm.
generations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to stop that. And that's one of the reasons why I believe a balanced budget and citizen control of taxation of a single automated payment transaction tax is essential. Today, the U.S. government is in the business of moving money from your pocket to the banks. And that's it. That's all it does. It is not in the business of actually governing on behalf of the public. And that's what we have to change. And I personally would like to see a general strike. I'd like to see a tax revolt. I would like to see communities and states begin talking about nullification and secession. Hawaii, Alaska, Texas, Vermont, there are a lot of states out there that are starting to recognize that the federal regulations and the federal spending, the federal militarization of their police, these are all toxic. So I believe the people need to get back in charge, and they need to understand that as long as we allow the federal government to print money in our name, they are going to continue spending the country into bankruptcy for future generations.
All right. Well, great question. And thank you very much, because taxes, it does go along with the same open source conversation. So thanks for the phone call there. Got one more caller that we've got time for here. Bob in Chattanooga. Bob, hi. Do you have a question for Robert David Steele?
Yes, sir. Part of my frustration is knowing the truth and sharing with people that won't accept it. They call me a nut, and they call me, you know, I'm involved in conspiracy and everything else. I'm a Marine with two tours in Vietnam, and I look at this country now, and I just completely go crazy sometimes about where we're at now.
Bob, I'll be brief since we're running out of time, but stick to your guns, because one of the things, if you look up at Phi Beta Iota, if you look up in the search box, conspiracy plus sane, or just conspiracy sane, one of the things you'll find out is that the psychologists are starting to say that the so-called conspiracy theorists are saner than everybody else. The second thing you'll find is that CIA actually invented the term conspiracy theorist, and it's a term that's been deliberately coined to marginalize people that are speaking the truth that is inconvenient to the powers that be.
That's interesting.
So hang in there, because it's not a conspiracy if it's true. And the truth is, in fact, going to be our salvation.
Thank you for bringing up that question. You are still serving our country, my friend, because you brought up the fact that the truth is becoming the norm. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Bob. Well, I mean, so much has been brought up here. We didn't stick to just one topic. But when you talk about, as you say, Earth intelligence, you're talking about everything. You wrap in politics and open source and taxes and government and military. It's all wrapped together in the same thing. It's not, you know, you can even combine here food and health. It's health, across the board.
Is health for all of us. I mean, open source everything is a very uplifting theme for humanity. It restores the power that human beings uniquely have to think and share and innovate. And it gets us out of this industrial gerbil on a wheel rat race that we're in.
Mm. Well, it's definitely an interesting conversation. I love the caller that I didn't get on, and she's no longer on, but asked about, could we ever have a conscious government? And that's the type of government that I would love to have.
A conscious government is a government in which all of the citizens are participating all of the time, and there are no secret private deals with bankers.
So it's basically open source.
Yes.
Open source government, open source software, open source internet. That's what you're talking about. Now we understand what open sourcing is. Well, fascinating information. And thank you so much for being on today. I think this is a great thing to bring up, and that the power can be restored back into the hands of the people by sharing information, just like we do in small communities. We can do on a larger scale level and find like-minded activists just like ourselves, and carry out what we want to see happen in the world. So thank you so much.
And it's my pleasure. I'll just mention there are 55 opens that people can think about.
55 opens. What does that mean?
Different kinds of opens. There's 55 of them. So I just want people to really expand their minds and understand that this whole open meme is huge.
So there's more than just what you're talking about. And you've brought this to about 66 different countries. Is that right?
Well, that was open source intelligence. I've since expanded. Open source everything, I think, is the new holy grail. And what I'm trying to do is teach people to combine holistic analytics, true cost economics, and open source everything engineering, which reduces radically the cost of everything.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And that wraps it up for Robert David Steele. Thank you so much. We will be back after the break talking about, wow, here comes a whole nother controversial subject, but a really good one, about what if we could live forever? We will be back, joined by scientist Bill Andrews, to address that question and so much more around curing aging. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.